Hey everybody, welcome to On The Mic Podcast. This is your host, Tim Drake. On today's episode, I talk with Jacob Soboroff from Pivot TV's Take Part Live, also YouTube Nation, and formerly of HuffPost Live. It was great to talk to Jacob and kind of get to know him a little bit more. Find out, you know, a little bit about the show, kind of their structure of Take Part Live. If you're not familiar with Take Part Live, it's on Pivot TV. Jacob co-hosts with Megan McCain, daughter of John McCain. And it's a fun nightly news show that, you know, it's not, you know, right wing or left wing. It's just kind of, you know, this today's issues. So it was really fun to kind of talk with Jacob and kind of learn about some of the other projects that he's working with, helping, you know, get more voter awareness out, as well as, you know, some of what he's looking forward to do in the future. Also kind of talk with Jacob about something that I've always found funny is stupid state laws. I know when I was a kid, I used to always go through and see, you know, what stupid state laws Utah had. We talked about some of those throughout the episode, as well as, you know, where Jacob's career started and where he sees it going. Part of Take Part Live involves, you know, being able to meet, you know, a lot of great people, as well as politicians. And we talked about, you know, kind of the oddities of, you know, when you meet a politician, how for some reason they're just incredibly intimidating, far more than meeting any other celebrity. And kind of the reason, you know, that we feel that might be kind of how it happens. This next week, a week from today. So I will hopefully be performing at Nerdmelt's open mic in Los Angeles. Austin and I will be driving down to Los Angeles next Sunday. We've got a lot of stuff going on for the few days that we're down there. So I'm hoping to be able to get onto open mic over at Nerdmelt. So come stop by if you're in the area. I'd love to see you guys. I believe it starts at 7 o'clock, but don't quote me. It's not something I regularly do. Go to the Nerdmelt website and you can find out about that. But yeah, hopefully I'll be able to get to grab a spot on there. If not, I'm definitely going to be hanging out over at Nerdmelt because I've always wanted to swing by their showroom and kind of check things out over at Meltdown Comics. So, you know, come by and say hi. A couple weekends ago, Austin and I decided, you know, what the hell, we're going to enter one of those 48-hour film projects just to kind of see, you know, how it all works and just for the challenge. And we shot a really fun one that we called The Decision. We decided to do it all in one shot. So we were inspired by Birdman. We've always loved doing the long takes. And so we decided to give it a try, and it worked out well. It was a lot of fun. It took us hours and hours and hours of rehearsal. Most of our 48 hours was just simply rehearsing to get everything down for that shot. But it was a lot of fun, and I think it came out well. You can see that at 48filmproject.com. And yeah, it's called The Decision. You can check that out. It's a comedy that I wrote, directed, and produced with Austin. So yeah, it's a lot of fun. But yeah, make sure you come by this week. Come by and see me at Nerdmelt on November 24th. That is next Monday, 1 week from today. And then also, I'll kind of be out and about in Los Angeles on Tuesday. If anybody wants to come swing by and say hi, I'm going to be showing Austin around Hollywood. He's never been out there after living out there for a bit and, you know, getting ready to move back out there. I thought I'd give him, you know, show him around, kind of let him see what the city's about. As all of you guys know, I absolutely love L.A. It's one of my favorite places. I know that it feels so weird to say that I just love L.A., but there's something about it that ever since I was a kid and my family would go out, every year we'd spend at least a week a year out in L.A., down in Anaheim and as well. And I know that Anaheim's not L.A., just don't get on me about that. So I know, it's not L.A., it's Orange County, I'm well aware. But we'd also go to Anaheim, but I've had, you know, plenty of my life in Los Angeles, and I just love the place. I hope you guys enjoy this episode of Jacob Soboroff. Seriously, such a great guy. It was so much fun talking with him. Hopefully we'll be able to kind of connect once I get out to LA, swing by and say hi to him and everybody at Take Part Live. It was great to learn more about this show. Make sure you guys, if you guys haven't already watched it, check it out. You can go to takepartlive.com as well as check it out on Pivot TV. You can also check Jacob out on his YouTube channel. It's always cool. He does a lot of Q&As with fans, and we'll have all the links to that on the mic website. You can go to onthemicpodcast.com and check that out. You can follow Jacob on Twitter. Those links will also be up on the website. Make sure that you're following me on Twitter at Tim Drake, as well as following us, the podcast on Twitter at On The Mic Podcast. Stay up to date with everything that we're doing film-wise, podcast-wise, travel-wise, tour-wise, everything. We want to see you guys. We want to connect. Thank you guys so much for all the support. Enjoy this episode with Jacob Soboroff.
Jim.
Hey, how are you, Jacob?
How you doing, man? Thank you for doing this.
Not a problem at all. It's my pleasure to have you on. So as soon as I found out I was having you on, I had to make sure, you know, following your trademark, that I had a cup of coffee ready too. So.
Yeah. Okay. Good man. I love that.
Well, how are things out in LA today?
Everything's good in LA, man. A little overcast, which is perfect. We need it.
Yeah, I'll actually be out in your neck of the woods in just 2 weeks here, so I'm looking forward to being back out that way.
Oh, right on, man. Yeah, hopefully it'll be beautiful for you.
I hope so. Here in Salt Lake, I think it's supposed to snow tomorrow, and I am not ready for that at all yet.
Can't believe it. Well, I mean, it's good to see. I'll be out there for Christmas. I go usually get out there to go skiing. Love it out there.
Oh, right on. Well, you'll have to hit us up while you're out here.
Yeah, for sure, man.
So I saw from some of your YouTube stuff, you've also come out here for some Sundance stuff as well in the past.
Yeah, I probably like for 7 years in a row when I was working for AMC. I did Sundance for AMC in the early days, like in the early days of Mr. Ben stuff.
So that's really cool. I've only growing up in Utah, I've only just started covering Sundance stuff over the last couple of years, and it's a really cool experience.
It is, right? But it's hectic, huh?
Yeah. So, well, I just have kind of started introducing myself to Take Part Live, and I've absolutely loved the show that you guys have. How long has that been on through Pivot TV now?
So, you know, I joined Pivot when the network launched in August of 2013, and Pivot, of course, is Participant Media, so Participant has been around a lot longer. Participant's done Inconvenient Truth, Waiting for Superman, Good Night, Good Luck, The Help, a lot of films, Lincoln, if I didn't say that, and they, a lot of films with, you know, pro-social messages, films with a message, and then so they started Pivot, they spun off into a television network as well. The company was started by Jeff Soule, who was the first employee of eBay and the president of eBay, and Pivot started in August 2013, Take Part Live started right then on day one, and we're in essentially season two of the show, which is a new version of the show, and it's a blast, man, to get to do live TV news every night with two really fun people.
Yeah, and I love in a way it's very lighthearted, but still, you know, delivering strong stories. And I mean, even just last night, your guys' segment of Ask a Veteran, it's fun, and it involves people, I think, in the right way, where so many people look at so much media and so much news in such a negative light nowadays, that I think it's bringing back kind of the forefront of being able to just enjoy a good news story and have fun with it as well.
That's the thing, Tim. It's like, you know, when I watch the news, it feels very one-directional and sort of like, here's the stuff that's going on in the world and what you need to know, and have a nice day, you know?
Yeah.
And our show, you know, we try to be sort of like the anti-news show insofar as, like, it's very interactive, it's very loose, and the types of conversations that we're having are ones that we want to have with the audience. Not, you know, I did HuffPost Live before I did Take Part Live. I was part of the team that launched the streaming network of the Huffington Post. And it was all built around this idea of engagement with the community. And the same thing on Take Part Live is, like, it's very much a viewer-driven news program, which is cool. And the thing is, like, it's not traditionally produced either. It's produced by, you know, Embassy Row, which produces Talking Dead, The Walking Dead After Show, and they produce Watch What Happens Live, and they produce Shark After Dark on the Discovery Channel. It's this company that's known for interactive television, and I think you sort of see some sort of bullshit interactive TV on the news where it's like they read a tweet here or there, or, you know, they're trying to make you feel like they're listening to you. But truthfully, a lot of even what we do on the show is stuff suggested from the viewers, and sometimes even we'll have a viewer on to talk about the news with
them. So, and I think by, you know, keeping it, you know, very open like that, and you know, having a listener on or a viewer on, and you know, answering their questions, you know, through YouTube forums, sometimes it's the same people that have even, you know, responded several times to you guys. I think it, you know, really does take that away. I know I was interviewed for a radio show a few years back, and it was just some sports questions that they were asking, and I was hesitant to even do it because I knew that they were going to slant it. And sure enough, they cut my interview to completely make it sound that I was slanting it in a different way and that I was wrong. And it wasn't even what I had said. And so I liked that that's something
live,
that you guys,
you know,
have done.
Like, I used to love to call it the sports talk radio, or like after I see the Dodgers game or the Clippers games or whatever, I would call in and talk. And that's what I love about being live every day. You know, when you're live, it's literally no filter, you know, and both, it goes both ways, because since we're, you know, such sort of an open source model for a television program, we, you know, there really isn't an opportunity to censor much of what comes through. And it's, you know, because we're in, you know, for lack of a better term, deep cable, where swearing is okay, sort of. I mean, it's sort of no holds barred, like being on an HBO news show, which is really cool.
Yeah, and another thing I like about it, I mean, you have so much back and forth with the media now where, you know, Fox News is ultra-conservative and MSNBC is ultra-liberal, and, I mean, you have so many people arguing on what side of the table that's on, and it seems more or less you guys, your focus, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but it's just mainly, what are today's issues, how can we address this and open up the discussion?
In, like, a rational way, exactly, right? So, you know, Meghan McCain, obviously the daughter of Senator John McCain, is a conservative. Baratunde Thurston, author of a New York Times bestselling book called How to Be Black, I would say is, you know, fairly liberal. And I think that I'm a pretty liberal guy also. You know, it certainly isn't a left-right center kind of situation, but we definitely get into screaming matches and get after each other, but it's not like me and Baratunde teaming up on Megan or Megan going after both of us because we were sure the same views. It's like, you know, world is a nuanced place, man, and it's like, I think you just don't get those nuances when you watch regular news programming. Very much is the Democratic talking points if you're watching MSNBC, or the Republican talking points if you are watching Fox. And on CNN, you know, they have this model now of just, like, chasing the breaking news, and, you know, sometimes that's really interesting, and sometimes you get the poop cruise for 10 days.
Yeah.
And, you know, we just want it to be a place where we're having, you said it, like, where we're having a conversation, a discussion about something, which more is really like a talk radio podcast format than TV, but I think that there's a lot of room on TV for more of that.
Yeah, and I definitely think that that's true. You know, it's all of media, all of TV. I mean, even as we see, you know, some of the late night shows kind of slightly reformat, even, you know, some of the major news shows, taking that reformat and making it where it is a little bit more open, more of kind of a podcast style of an interview, even where it's not so structured. These are the questions you're going to answer. This is, you know, the point of view we're going to drive. And I think that that's kind of making, in a way, I don't necessarily want to say voters, since we had such a low turnout, but the American people think in a little bit different light.
I think you're totally right. And, oh, man, don't even get me started on low voter turnout. But I do think that, you know, the idea is, by the way, it's like the irony of the whole thing is it's so much easier to engage through media today than it is to engage in the ballot box, because it's that difficult. Everybody makes everything. So, you know, you can hope to inspire people by using, you know, mass media at this point, whether it's Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, website, you know, on television, streaming, online, podcasts, whatever. But then once you try to get out to the ballot box, that's a whole other set of challenges, man. It's like running a track and field race and jumping over hurdles.
Yeah, I think jumping over hurdles is possibly one of the best analogies that I can really see of having to navigate that. It really is. It's like a hurdle every click of the web, or every, you know, click of the remote. So now,
go ahead, sorry.
I was just going to ask, you know, where your career is at now. I know you initially started when you started into college at NYU in their acting program. I mean, did you ever think that this was kind of the direction that your career was going to take, kind of focusing on a news network style of show?
I always loved it. I was a pretty funny, goofy kid, and I used to dress up like as a news anchor when I was young, and like do mock news broadcasts. But I didn't. I never really knew. And the way that I've sort of gone about doing my career was, you know, it's been like, let's just do one thing and let's lead to the next thing. And straight out of college, you know, I worked in politics. I was working for Mayor Bloomberg in New York as an advanced guy, and then Howard Dean doing the same job, which is essentially like, you're a personal aide, and you get events set up, and then give a briefing to the mayor or whatever when they show up. And you know, I got out of college, and I sort of said, "What am I going to do? I would love to combine these, you know, worlds that I operate in." And I just didn't know. Like, I don't know if you did, but like, I loved NTV News when I was a kid growing up. I always thought it was so cool and like a really accessible style of news. I just sort of went home and I was like, "How do I do that? Or how do I do something like that?" And just started meeting people and talking to people and hustling. And one thing led to the next, where it was like, I did this Why Tuesday project, which is, you know, why do we vote on Tuesday? It was like a documentary video blog where I was putting all these politicians on the spot about this absurd rule that we vote on Tuesday because we all traveled in horse and buggies in 1845, and that was just convenient for horse and buggy people. And, you know, people saw this. They thought these interviews were hysterical. I was putting politicians on the spot. Nobody knew the answer. AMC came calling, and then this NBC school, Brad came calling, and I did some stuff with CNN, and I went over to do some NBC News stuff, ultimately, and Net Health Post Live, and Facebook Live, and YouTube Nation, and everything just sort of has stumbled back to the other, which is what I love. You know, I think that a lot of people that are in the news business today, and particularly even before today, like, went through the local news system. It was like baseball or something. It was like a farm system where you went and came up through the ranks.
Right.
I was never something I was attracted to because I always just wanted to go out and tell stories that I was interested in and passionate about. And I do feel, you know, really lucky in that sense. But today I'm able to be on this sort of different news show and talk about traditional things and talk about stuff in the news, which is in a different way. I feel very lucky, and it's a pretty liberating feeling, honestly.
So with everything that you've done, what has been, you know, the favorite story or favorite event that you've had a chance to cover?
I mean, getting to meet the gentlemen, unfortunately it's the only gentlemen, that have been the nominees for their parties, you know, running for president, has been really cool. You know, I got to meet Barack Obama when he was running for president, and Mitt Romney as well. I met Mitt Romney a couple times, once when I was working for MTV News around the last election, and Obama when I was doing this Why Tuesday project. And to be able to be out on the road, I love being out on the road. To be out on the road and to go to a place like Iowa where, like, politicians, retail politics is so accessible because it's something like the Iowa caucus, which is the first, you know, nominating contest in the presidential election.
Right.
It's just such a blast, man. To be able to walk up to Barack Obama, you know, in 2007, and be like, hey, I'm this guy, Jacob. I ask your question about something, it's an extraordinary feeling. So, I mean, I've gotten to report on all kinds of stuff, do a doc series down in Tijuana talking to migrants, or, you know, going to Fresno and going on marijuana raids with cops and, you know, shooting guns out the gun range. But I think that, for me, being able to sort of, like, speak truth to power face-to-face is the coolest part of, you know, the job and what I do. It's when would you ever get that chance otherwise?
Yeah, and it's true. And I mean, especially with politicians, I don't know about you. I know for me, you know, out of all the different people that, you know, I get to meet doing, you know, either this show or filming or anything like that, it's almost strange that when you meet a politician, their demeanor, it's almost a little bit intimidating. I mean, even meeting like the biggest, you know, movie stars, athletes, it's something different with politicians. I know last year when President Obama had come to Burbank last year, he was driving right down the street from where I was living at the time. And I was like, eh, cool, go check out the presidential motorcade. And ended up getting a good spot where the president was able to look right at me and wave. And it was just kind of like, he's in a car, and I almost pissed myself. That was just insane.
I'm glad you did not. It's intimidating, man. It's like, I mean, and I don't get it. What do you think it is? I don't know why people are so intimidated by our politicians. Ultimately, at the end of the day, you know, maybe it is that they've taken on the celebrity aura, but the truth is they work for us. You know, they should be accessible to us, so often they're not, which is why I think people are so, like, you know, as you said, like, nobody comes out to vote, why people are so turned off by politics. It just feels, doesn't it feel like sort of like this other world that we can't really touch, even though, you know, they frankly owe their jobs to us.
Yeah, and that's a fantastic point. And I know with one of the radio jobs I'd had a chance to do for the last year, I mean, we were able to get in a lot of different politicians, even calling out some of the local politicians that it would quickly get back up to Capitol Hill, and within an hour they'd be in our studio. And I mean, it was funny to kind of, you know, get them in studio and kind of strip down those layers. And some of them, I know we have one local senator out here that I almost don't even feel like he's a senator because he makes himself so accessible, and he's just a sweet, kind-hearted person. But I think more of them need to kind of be like that. They need to be that everyday guy.
No, I do, man. That's exactly right. And for me, it's like there's so many absurdities and contradictions in the political system. That's what I love. I love calling them out, and I love bringing them straight to the politicians. And, like, I'll give you an example. At some point, I would love to do, whether it's a TV show or whatever, about the dumbest laws in the country. I've been talking about this a lot recently. Many dumb ones still on the books. Like, you go on, you search the hashtag dumb laws, and you see stuff like, it's illegal to wear a fake mustache in an Alabama church. Or, I mean, it's like crazy stuff. Like, you can't have a bathtub in your house in Virginia, or you can't sell ice cream in New Jersey after 6 p.m. And it's like, people, the stuff that is going on in our political system that is, and by the way, we vote on Tuesday because no good reason that nobody votes, or the U.S. is the only country in the world without, or the only developed country without paid maternity leave, you know? It's like, all this stuff is so crazy and so antiquated. It's like, either politicians are dumb and are, you know, not thinking about this stuff, or they're completely avoiding this stuff and leaving it on the books or wherever. And I just feel like that's what I love about, again, like, it's on all of us to go out there and point out how stupid some of this stuff is in order to actually get things changed. And once, how validating is it ultimately to see, again, that's part of the reason people don't like politics. They don't, they literally don't feel like they make a difference. To be able to see politicians hear you and then actually change something because it would be fit.
Right, and you know, to even take a spin on that, I think it'd be hilarious to take the you know, dumbest laws in each state, and do a 50-day tour to each state or something, and break one of the dumbest laws.
I mean, dude, I would do it on ice, dumb laws on ice, and I'd go to arenas. So, I mean, seriously, whatever it takes to point out how stupid and how backwards the political system is, I would do it. I would love to go to all 50 states. And yeah. By the way, any of your listeners or you or whatever, find some dumb laws, send them to me. I'll go track them down.
Yeah, I think here in Utah, still on the books, it is illegal to not drink milk.
Oh my God, see, it's like that kind of stuff. Illegal not to drink milk. I'll give you another one. Somebody tweeted me yesterday when I was talking about this dumb laws idea somewhere else, and somebody heard me talking about it and said, in I can't remember if it was Chino or Chico here in California, it's illegal to detonate a nuclear weapon. It's like, no shit. But like, they're copped out and forcing that. Like, what is going on?
I just thought that they had to make a law for that. That's amazing. There was time taken to make that into a law.
Local community, it's like, did they have that? Was there like a big problem of people getting together, blowing up nukes?
Oh, that's amazing. So now,
milk was a good one. I might have to get out there and start dump milk in the street and see if I get arrested.
I mean, we see so many of them even hitting the news now. I mean, was it in Florida like a week ago, the 90-year-old guy that was feeding the homeless and was arrested?
Yeah. Isn't that crazy? Like, yeah, there's another one, man. Oh, man, this is good. I have to write these down.
So now with YouTube Nation, I know they've kind of been doing some reformatting. You haven't been doing a ton of that recently. Is there any time that you're expecting to kind of be back doing YouTube Nation?
You know, the honest answer is I don't know, and it's been, you know, these first 9 months have been really extraordinary. You know, we started at 0 subscribers and built it up to 2 million and got 50 million views in the 9 months that I was fronting the show. And obviously, you know, the whole idea behind the show, and when Jeffrey Katzenberg and DreamWorks came up with it, it was, let's be a utility for people that don't know what to find on YouTube, and every day we're going to bring the best videos around. And I think that there's some conversation going on right now about, do people on YouTube actually need that? Do people on YouTube know what they want, and do we want to present the show in a bit of a different way? And I think, you know, if you're a regular watcher of the show, you see that they're experimenting more with a, I would say, for lack of a better sort of term, like a sketch comedy or, you know, ensemble kind of thing where it's more featuring talent than featuring the videos. And, you know, I basically talked to those guys and I said, why don't we see what happens and see how it goes? And for the moment, I'm sitting it out. Because, as you talked about, you know, I'm really a news guy at heart. I want to bring people information that they don't know. And we'll see how the format shakes out. You know, I think that, it's, like with anything, particularly with Google, it's so analytic-driven. They're looking at, you know, how people respond. And, you know, I think over the next couple months, we'll see what they land on with the format. For the time being, I'm sort of riding the pine while they figure out what the format's going to be.
So, but even with not doing that, it seems like you keep plenty busy as it is. So I'd kind of laughed as I was looking through so much of you know, your biography, a lot of what you've done. I'd laughed and I was just like, he's kind of like you know, another Chris Hardwick. And then I actually read somewhere in one of your bios that people have unofficially called you that.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of Chris, and actually, funny enough, the first gig I ever did in TV was with Chris. He hosted a show on PBS called Wired Science from Wired Magazine.
Yeah.
And PBS out here in L.A. And I think I was, like, straight out of college, contributed a piece about the science of baseball. I love Chris, and I love what Chris has done in terms of just bringing, you know, nerd culture and comedy, nerd comedy culture into the mainstream. And I think, you know, honestly, I would love to emulate what Chris has done in the news world, and sort of be that untraditional guy, that nerdy guy who's super nerdy about, you know, my thing is not necessarily comic books and geek culture, but, like, I'm nerdy about civics, I'm nerdy about politics. And I would love to be able to bring that sort of mainstream in the way that Chris did for the things that he is passionate about.
And I definitely think you're on the right path to doing so. I mean, your YouTube page, you know, has you know, plenty of followers. Your Twitter, I mean, people are grasping on. I mean, they love what you're doing. I mean, it's great content. And I mean, that's all as entertainers.
I love the feedback also. I love the fact that today, you know, whomever can almost develop stuff in real time with the feedback of these communities, you know, that have embraced, you know, me, you, whomever, on social media. And it's so cool to hear from people every day. You know, I stay when I record. I try to once a week, if I do the time to sit down, record just a Q&A with people on my YouTube channel about stuff people want to ask about or what they're wondering about. And it helps you sort of hone in on what people want to hear. And while, obviously, you know, you got to go out and do your own thing as well, it's just so cool to have that constant feedback with.
Yeah, and it's great to be able to, you know, be right there with your fans. I mean, they're the reason any of us have careers, is because of fans, and it's great to make yourself accessible to them.
Or why our asses get kicked out of the street.
Yeah. Well, Jacob, thank you so much for taking the time today, and hopefully, you know, Take Part Live just continues with the success. You know, I think it's going to be something that as more and more and more people grasp onto it, it's going to become a mainstream thing for sure. And I mean, it's a great show, and I wish you all the success with it.
I appreciate it, man. I'm a big fan of yours, and when you're out in LA, back out here, give us a shout.
Yeah, we definitely will. And hey, same when you're out here in Salt Lake, you know, we'd love to have you stop by.
You got it, man. Tell all that riffraff at Sundance to settle down.
Yeah, I definitely will. You have a great one, Jacob.
All
thanks.
Right, all the best, Tim.
We'll see you.
Thanks.